Good evening. Good to see everybody out this evening. Appreciate you coming out. Sarah's a little bit all over the place today. Jay was going to come up this week, and then he got some things going on. He does travel 2 hours on Sunday night, so we'll give him a pass on that one. So we appreciate everybody coming out. Tonight we're going to talk about steadying the boat. We had a lot of water, a lot of storms this summer. Something to think about, especially with the Ohio River there and everything very close to us. And these are biblical encouragement for times of trouble. What troubles you in your life? Think about that in our life. If you were, what trouble in your life, if you removed it, would it make it perfect? Everybody probably in here has a trouble that they're dealing with right now. Say, if I removed it, it would make my life perfect or more perfect right now. The cool thing about standing in the back when you shake people's hands or even standing up here is when you're connected with people in your community, you know there is some, every single person in here has a trouble. Every single person in here has a conflict that they're battling, whether it's just internally or even externally. Sometimes it's health, sometimes it's a lot of other things, but everybody has a trouble. One time a guy told me, you've never had any trouble in your life. You are a golden boy. That is the dumbest statement I think I've ever heard about myself in my life. That is not true about anybody. And if I want you to get anything else from this lesson, realize that every single person has troubles. And just because your troubles might look different than their troubles does not mean it is not a trouble of their own. Every person in this room has troubles, whether they be self-inflicted problems or just the problems of day-to-day life. For my entire life, I've had the privilege of attending church. I've had really good parents who've taken me to church, which is great, and I've appreciated that every single step of the way. And when my focus on God was shaky, I've had the fortune of having a steady hand of influence around me to correct my focus, my troubles, before they went too deep. I think it's part of the beauty of coming to church on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday night. Even when you're not studying your Bible correctly, even when you're not looking at it every day, and there's a the song goes in the kids' class, or in the little kids' class, the B-I-B-L-E, yes, that's the book for me, I stand alone in the Word of God, the B-I-B-L-E, what's the next verse that? The more we read the Bible, the Bible, the Bible, the more we read the Bible, the happier we'll be. So simple, we tell it to the kids, they memorize it so easy, but then as we get to be adults, we do not practice that. Very easy thing to combat trouble is to read the Bible, but we all get away from it. We all have problems where life is too busy to sit down and read just a little bit of the Bible. But my life, I've been very lucky to have those times where I've been able to come to church and kind of correct my focus. However, it wasn't until I went to a psychiatrist years ago when I was living in Maryland, and I had dealt with some troubles in my life that, I was thinking one day, I just don't know if I'm fully mentally all there. Maybe I, as I put it to myself, maybe I'm insane. You ever had a moment where you wake up in the morning like, a lot going on, maybe I'm insane. I mean, that's probably a pretty far reach, but I was in my 20s and it seemed logical at the time. So I called my mom. I remember I was on the way to work at the time and I said, hey, I think, she's like, hey, how you doing? I was like, I think I'm insane. And she's like, what? And so I said, I'm going to the psychiatrist today. So I was bound and determined. I left work early. I was pretty embarrassed, but I had never been to a psychiatrist at that time. And I remember going down to psychiatric help, and there's nothing wrong with psychiatric help. Of course, it was a very big stigma around it when I was a kid. And so I went into the place thinking, okay, you know, this is probably the answer to my, I'm a little different, I understand that, maybe this is what it is. So I go through this 99 question thing this doctor gave me, and it was a very interesting thing. And at the very end of it, I was waiting for it. Like, here we go. Like, I'm ready for my diagnosis. And then thankfully, I just suffer from what he said, an extremely high level of intelligence, which is a weird thing for someone to tell you. But that's why my brain works very quickly. So I asked him, I said, so why do I have so many problems in my life? I said, I'm in my 20s. It feels like sometimes everything's, I'm really high in life, I'm really excited about life, and then other days I feel so low. And he just looked at me and said, Nathan, that's life. It's always up and down. And then I started realizing, as he said it, for some reason people had told me my whole life, I started looking at the Bible, and the Bible doesn't tell you there's a time you're going to go through life and you're just going to be the happiest person in the world. When you become a Christian, and guess what? You're going to get baptized, and every single day after you've been baptized, your life is going to be so fun and so wonderful. And sometimes Christians, more mature Christians, they look like they have it all together. They have it all together their whole life. And as you see people get older and more mature in their Christianity, you say, wow, they've got it all figured out. They always have it figured out. What we don't see is their time when they're in their 16 or they're 25 or they're 34 or 64 or whatever, when they've had troubles. Their time on Tuesday when they were having troubles. The thing about the Bible is it doesn't preach everything is super high or super low. It says you need to be in the middle. You're right in the middle. That doesn't sound exciting, right? The world teaches us you got to be high all the time. You got to be excited all the time. Everything's got to be awesome all the time. Remember that song from the Lego movie? Back in 2000. Everything is awesome. And so feel get pumped in our head all the time. Every morning I got to be on. Every morning I got to be happy. Every morning I got to be excited. The truth is that is not life. There are circumstances that we all deal with that'll bring us down. We do not. I work at a grief center. It is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life that we don't talk about grief as a society. We are so afraid of it. Do you know every one of us in here, should be a shocker, you are all going to die. Not today, hopefully. But we are all going to die at some point. And if you're just realizing that, I'm sorry. It's going to happen, okay? We've all had loved ones die, or we will all have loved ones die, and we will all die ourselves, but we do not want to talk about it. We do not want to talk about being sad or anything else. If we go to somebody, we feel like we're being negative or we're being a griper every time we have a problem. That's not normal. The Bible says to go to each other with our what? Our burdens. Yet when we have a physical ailment, most people won't even announce it for prayers at church because they don't want to burden somebody. Where have we got to in society? Do you ever have this happen? Someone comes up to you and they say, I'm sorry, all I can do is pray for you. Did you hear? They apologize for praying for you. That is the greatest gift you can give somebody, is to pray for them, okay? It's not a flat screen TV. It's not a car. It's not a house. The greatest thing you can give somebody is to pray for them. I've heard people apologize. I'm sorry, all I can do is pray for you. Life is like that sometimes. That is a humbling thing to realize. I don't have the words. As Americans, we want to offer a solution for everything, right? We hear someone's problem, we want to cut them off and tell them the answer before they're done. Oh, you just got to do this. You just got to do this. That is not a helpful practice for Christians. It's not a helpful practice for us. You don't have the answers, okay? Relieve yourself of that burden. You don't have the answers to steady someone's boat. When people are having trouble, you might have a way to direct them, but you do not, within your mental makeup, have the answers. The only thing you can do is be a shining light to shine a light and guide them to the one with the answers, which is who? God. If you yourself are so presumptive that you think you know everything, you're fooling yourself. So remove that burden. When someone comes to you with a problem, you are not the one with the answers. Your first obligation is to, one, pray for them immediately. Two, look for answers together. That's a perfect time to study the Bible. Why is it we only study the Bible together when someone wants to become a Christian? After someone has become a Christian, it has become a practice that Christians do not study the Bible together. That's absurd. That is our book that we live our lives by. So when you have a problem, when you are dealing with a difficulty, the first things we should do is pray, and then we should have a Bible study. The only way we have a Bible study, it seems like, as Christians, is when someone wants to become a Christian and when someone is doing something that is not according to God's will. The Bible is such a vessel. It is such a tool in so many other ways. But I believe we're all like this in some way. We're all looking for this high, or like, why am I high? Why am I low all the time? And we never think about, especially when we're younger, maybe you're coming late to the party, but I was very lucky to learn very early in my life that try to be in the middle. When things are really bad, which they're going to be, I'm going to try to get back to the middle, not up here.
When things are really high and going very well, I'm going to realize that the air will come out of it eventually, but I'm still going to be right here, okay? I'm not going to go from here to here to here to here to here.
I believe we're all like this to a certain extent. We walk around this world acting like at some point in our lives, everything is going to come together, and then our lives will be perfect, and we'll just go on living a perfect life every day. We feel as if we are climbing a mountain in life till we finally reach not a peak, but a plateau. And atop this mountain is a very long plateau that leads to life, a perfection, where everything and every day will be happy. Like these people we see from the outside who seem to have the most blessed, most perfect existence. The easiest one to poke a hole into is our social media friends. Very, 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 very rarely will you see someone on social media putting something off color on or somebody putting out something that you're dealing with that's difficult. I saw someone the other day talk about Sister Dorothy, who passed away just a few months ago, and they're having a tough time with it. It's so weird to see on social media someone actually saying, hey, I need prayers. Do you kind of just, does it feel icky to look at that? Does it feel disgusting? Do you like, oh, it should be all happy stuff here? Or do you sit there and you pray for that person? You might not even have to reach out to them, but you can too. But pray for them. They're having a difficult time. It takes a lot of guts to put on social media that you're having a tough time. But a lot of times we look at that as a what? A weakness. How dare they ask for prayers? How dare they have a difficulty? That is not a weakness. That is a strength to ask people that I am not perfect and I need prayers. But those social media friends, they all look happy. They all look their lives together. And we've seen it time and time again. Social media has been around long enough. I've worked in it a very long time. It's been around a very long time now. And we've seen these people that look like their lives are completely put together and their marriage falls apart. The people do physical harm to themselves because they're not happy. They're not focused on things. What might look like a perfect family or a perfect life on the outside is marred by mistakes and boats that are unsteady. Maybe you're looking at the past and you're thinking, my life was so much happier back then. I'm not sure why my dad says this, but he does say this. He said, the only thing good about the past is it's in the past. There are some good things in the past. But the thing is, a lot of people live in the past. We've all seen the stereotypical person who peaked in high school. We've heard that before, right? The high school athlete who was really good. The Uncle Rico, if you ever watched Napoleon Dynamite, who says, I could throw, if I just go back to that state championship, I would win it. I was a backup quarterback, but I would get in. If I would have got in, we would have won it. I can throw this football to the mountains. We have this foggy belief of what we used to be. Life was not perfect back then, and it's not perfect now. Then when don't we see this expected perfection of the life we are living? We ask ourselves things like, why did I deserve this mistake I'm in now? Why did I deserve this unsteady boat that I'm riding along in now? Why did God allow this to happen? Why isn't my life as good as that person over there? Comparison is such a tool of the devil. Today we're going to be exploring the facade of earthly perfection. Why we go through troubles as Christians, and some lessons Jesus teaches us about rising above these troubles. So don't fool yourself into believing life's going to be perfect. That is a facade. You've ever seen the cartoons. You've seen the people in the Sahara Desert. You've seen the mirage. What is it? They always, the cartoons, usually it's a cartoon character so thirsty they're dragging themselves through the desert and they see what? This oasis in the middle of the desert with this beautiful water and it's just clean water and just paradise on earth. And what do? They run to the water a lot of times in the cartoons. They start to drink it and it's all sand, right? A lot of times we look at that as a perfect life too. We start looking around at other people. I think especially like poor Batson, I feel he's in a very interesting time in life. I told him, I said, I remember Lucy Away told me, the only person, everybody came to like my college graduation, we had like a little party, it was a very nice thing. And I remember everybody's like, oh, you're going to go do great things, you're going to do great things. You're completely unsure of yourself when you're out of college. Because it's like the first time you're like, I don't have school. I'm not going to school in the fall. Like, what am I going to do? And you're trying to figure out who you are now without school, and school has been such a big part of your life.
And Lucia Way walked up to me, and this before I knew her very well, and very bluntly shook my hand, said, congratulations. And she said, this next year of your life is going to be the hardest year of your life. Just get through it. I'm like, what a weird thing to say. And I was like, thank you, lady. I will always remember those words. And as I went through all that hardship, you know what she did? She validated that it's okay to have hardship. Because when I was going through all those hardships, I felt like all my other friends were succeeding out of college. I was very successful in college, but when I got out of college, I very much stumbled at the start, and I was having a difficult time figuring it all out. But I kept thinking about Lucille's words, and I was so happy that she validated that experience and that I was able to go, you know what? It's okay that I'm not okay right now. It's okay that I'm not succeeding right now. It's okay that this is hard. There are things in life that are hard. And that was hard. It'll be hard, Batson, but you'll get through it. And you get through it with other people. But life will not be perfect. 1 Peter 4 and 12. Let's look at that. 1 Peter 4 and 12 says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. Don't act like this testing is strange. It's going to happen. I tell a lot of people anymore, I used to not plan for unplanned things in my day and my week. Now, that makes it's hard to understand maybe a little bit. I used to not plan for unplanned things that happen in my week. For instance, you fill your schedule up for the week. If you fill it too much, what happens? I've got a car appointment here. I got a doctor's appointment here. I got to go to work here. We got this. We got this. We got this. Perfect example. Last week was VBS. We had to get everything ready for VBS. We had to be at VBS. And it's a sacrifice. It's a lot of stuff, right? I had to mow the grass. Our son's birthday was Saturday. I had to try to figure out how to mow the grass, how to set everything up. It's a lot of stuff. The problem with unplanned things is that we don't plan for it. So we fill our schedule so filled that when things come up that go bad, like our car breaks down, our physical health starts to go through something. Maybe get a cold or the flu or something like that. So I started to plan in my week that there will be some time period in every day that I have that unplanned things will be there. I always tell people, this is how you grow up. Growing up is not like, I'm Mr. Business and I have a suit on and I go to work every day and I punch a clock and I pay my taxes. That's part of growing up. But that, to me, that's not really like what I want to look like. To me, growing up is just taking care of yourself. That's what it is. Taking care of these little things that come up. And not getting so out of tune about them. Psalm 34:19 says, many are the afflictions of the righteous. That doesn't sound too great, right? Many are the afflictions of the righteous. Am I reading the right Bible? Wait, the righteous have afflictions? Wait, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. God delivers us out of our afflictions. It even says the righteous will have afflictions. John 16:33. Jesus says, in the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. You don't think Jesus had hardships in this life? Read your Bible. If you think Jesus had a perfect existence on this earth, you are totally wrong. Jesus' own brothers question him. They had a powwow with him, saying, you're acting like you are the Messiah. What is wrong with you? Jesus knew who he was. Jesus' faith was grounded on God. People who were religious leaders, people that should have been so excited to worship with Jesus, spit on him, slapped him, hit him, mocked him, killed him. Jesus says, I have overcome the world. If he can overcome it, we can too. Next point tonight is Satan uses our troubles to get us to sin. Do make no mistake about it. When you are going through troubles, look for Satan. They say the devil's in the details. That's what you need to look for. What is Satan trying to do? And it's a chess game, right? He's very good at playing this chess game of life. When we are going through troubles, give yourself some grace, take a step back, and look at the big picture, and try to decipher where Satan is trying to succeed at. If you give yourself some time, you will find it. As you become a more mature Christian, hopefully you'll be able to do that quicker and you'll say, okay, I understand what's happening here. I understand a little bit of what's happening here. I understand that I need to go to God here. I understand I need to rely on people here. Shannon lost her job in May, as some of you know. It was very sudden. They called her into the office or the virtual office. She works remotely and just said, mass layoff. A lot of people are getting laid off. Shook the system. All of us. We had to change our life. Our lives have changed a lot, but they haven't changed a lot. Does that make sense? It is a very hard thing to see your spouse lose your job. It's a very hard thing for a family dynamic to lose a job like that, especially overnight. You get no unemployment. You get very, 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 very little severance pay. And they say, today, you're done. It's over. That's hard. It's a shock to the system. But when you're grounded in God, and I'm not saying we're perfect at this by any means, but the one thing I'm very proud of our family for and very happy our family is that we have continuously, as we went through the struggle together, we've done it together, not just as a family, but with God. We've worked together through it, and we've tried not to panic. There have been moments of panic. There have been moments of anxiety. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to act like it's perfect. It's not. But we continue to focus on God, and when those moments come up, they are minimized as opposed to maximized. Because we all know that moment, the moment when you go to leave your house and you forgot your keys. Oh, I forgot my keys. I forgot my wallet. You get to the car. Oh my goodness, I'm late. I'm late as it is. You go to get in the car because you forgot your wallet and you locked your keys in your car. Oh my goodness. There was a time in my life I locked my keys in my car without a way to get them 2 times. The police had to be called 2 times to help me get in my car. That's when they used to do it. I was a total mess in my 20s. 2 times I locked my keys in one day. The police, it's probably the same policeman. I can't remember, but this probably was. I was like, man, I'm a total mess. We've all had those days. Satan uses our troubles to get us to sin. He exploits troubles. He did this even in Jesus. In Matthew 4, if you turn to Matthew 4, 1 through 4, there Jesus is. He has not eaten for a very long time. Satan comes to him. He was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After he'd fasted for how many days? 40 days. None of us know what it's like to not eat for 40 days. Dad was very close to that in the hospital, and I'm sure he'll tell you some horror stories about that. And 40 nights. And then he became hungry. Yeah, duh, you think? 40 days? 40 minutes were into the refrigerator. What can I eat? And the tempter, Satan, came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread. Notice that he uses Jesus' hardship, his trouble, and he tries to attack it. Satan didn't just come at him in his strongest moment. Satan came to Jesus in his weakest moments. He will do the same to us. He is looking to devour you. What does a lion in the wilderness do? Does it look for the strongest animal in the herd to eat? No, it looks for the one who is weak or wounded, and it tries to take advantage of that. Why? Because it is easy prey. When you are weak, when you are wounded, the devil is looking to devour you. What does Jesus say back? Man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You know why that's in all capitals probably in your Bible? Not because he screamed it. He might have done that. It doesn't have an exclamation point, so I can't imagine that he did. But it's because he's quoting what? God's scripture. If we are not looking to the Bible for answers, we are looking to the earth for answers. We are looking to, and again, there's nothing wrong with psychiatric help. There's nothing wrong with that. It's very good to go talk to somebody. And I'm not saying, but if that's all we're looking at, or just our psychiatrist for help, that's not great. If we're looking to just our friends and our family for help, that's not great. They're not going to have the answers. We've got to be looking towards God. All those people can help, and hopefully they guide you. You have a good pack to help you guide yourself there, but they cannot be the only people. It's not good for a friendship. The only thing you do is ask them questions about trying to fix your life. I've had friends like that who all they wanted me to do is fix their problems in their lives. There's nothing wrong with telling problems to people. But the thing is, I just told you at the beginning, I don't have all the answers. I can't tell you how to live your life. I can only tell you what God says about it. And then guess what? Here's the thing. You have to go live that life. I cannot wake up for you and do those things.
1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "Who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able?" Feels like it sometimes, doesn't it? It feels like this temptation is so much. God, I know you will not tempt me beyond what I am able to withstand. But why am I able to withstand so much? When our loved ones die, when my dad was going through all the problems he went through, I tell you what, it is super hard to see a man as strong as a mountain, in your opinion, go through so many hardships. It's very hard to see your father begging for water. It's very hard to see your family not have the answers, and the doctors not have the answers, and the nurses not have the answers, and all the helpers in this world not have the answers. It's very, very hard. But God says, they will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. You are so much stronger than you give yourself credit for. All of us. And I guarantee, if you thought about your life and the things you are overcoming right now and the things you've overcome to even be here tonight, give yourself an applause mentally. You are so much stronger than you give yourself credit for. Life is hard. Life is a battle. The Apostle Paul certainly knew sufferings, and he regarded them as opportunities. I'm a former hurdler. I love hurdles. As you can see, I'm a former hurdler. I'm an old man now. I tried to run hurdles with Lydia, and I was sore for like a couple days. It was bad. But it was fun. I like hurdles. I like hurdles in life. I look at hurdles. There's so much opportunity in obstacles. When an obstacle comes up, I try to look for the opportunity. There have been some big obstacles in life. But God has always given me an opportunity. It might not be my opportunity. That's the thing. We always think it's my opportunity, right? It's about me. Mm-mm. I was talking to today to somebody who went through some hardships, and they were talking about how they had impacted some people to follow Christ. How they had impacted some people to maybe explore their faith a little bit more with how they handled their obstacle. And sometimes it's about other people's opportunity. Sometimes what we're doing, you might never see the impact you have. That person might not see these people that get led to Christ, that get baptized, but guess what? They might meet him in heaven. You may never see him again. You might just have one conversation with them in life, and you don't even know their name or who they're from or where they're from or anything about them, but you will meet them in heaven because of how you handled your obstacle. That's an amazing thought. Do not think that people don't notice, one, what you're going through, but also how you're steadying your boat, and hopefully you're steadying it with Christ. So why do Christians have troubles and trials? This will be the basis of our lesson, kind of the end of it too. So why do Christians have trials? To glorify God. Matthew 5:16, we do this little light of mine with the kids. This little light of mine, I'm going to let you. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. We need to let our light shine. And this does not mean, again, shining a light that is perfection. Shining a light is not perfection as the world sees it. It's striving for perfection. None of us are perfect. But our imperfections, in our imperfections, we can shine a light that's so bright because of what we're trying to give up to pursue Christ. Sometimes, and this is what really annoys me, especially in people think this is always happens. If you're going through a hardship, it must be a repercussion for your sin. They did this to Job. You remember that? His friends came and what did you do, Job? He had a lot of bad things happen. And sometimes that does happen. If we do sin, there are repercussions for our sins. Let's look at James 4:17. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. We know when sin happens, bad things happen.
It sets off that domino. You've seen the domino effect where people set up all the dominoes and they click one and it goes this way and it goes around. It's the same thing. When we sin, you might think no one knows about it and no one might ever find out about it on earth. But there will be repercussions for the sin. Our mind is a very cavernous place. It is filled with a lot of stuff. And when we sin, our mind gets stained. Our brain gets stained. Our lives get stained. And so no matter how little you think that sin is, it does set off a chain reaction of bad things. But the other way is, if you do the right thing, it also sets off a chain reaction of good things. It doesn't mean that every single thing will be perfect, but it does mean that there will be things like that. Everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissionable, but not everything is constructive. Hebrews 12, 5 through 11 talks about that there. To build our faith. This is another one. 1 Peter 1, 6 through 7. 1 Peter 1, 6 through 7. In this you are greatly rejoiced, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor to the revelation of Jesus Christ. Hebrews 11, 17 says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. And one more verse, and then we'll talk about this. James 5, 11, we count those blessings who endured it. Who endured? You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, and that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. To build our faith. People always look at Job. I had a friend who lost his twin brother, identical twin brother. They did everything together. They never even ate a different food. They lived together until their late 50s. They never even ate a different food because they were afraid that one would die before the other. They drove everywhere together. They worked with each other. They were inseparable. One died of a massive heart attack one day on the phone, just died. The other one said, you know, I'm having a real tough time. They were Christians of some sort, and they were always very much involved in their faith. They were very out about their faith. They were very tell everybody about their faith. And I was talking to the one later, I said, how is life going? Like, you know, how hard that has to be to lose. It's a part of you, a huge part of you. And he said, you know, people just keep telling me, just read Job, and you'll figure it out, you'll figure it out, just read Job. That's part of it, for sure. That's part of it. But people act like because Job was blessed at the end that he didn't still grieve his children. People act like because Job got earthly things at the end and he got these wealth and all this stuff back and it was two times, three times what he had before, that he forgot all about the past. That he forgot all about the sores that he had all over him. That he forgot about the trials and tribulations he went through. He did not. I promise you that. I didn't know Job, but you don't forget your kids. They say about kids, there's a word for a person who loses a husband or a wife. There's a word for a person who loses their parents, but there is no word for a person who loses their child because it is too overwhelming to even think of a word. Yes, you live. You live on, and hopefully those things build our faith, not tear it down. But you just don't get over it. We are in a society, and again, I work at a grief center, so we're in a society where our work tells you, you have 3 days to grieve your loved one, and after that you should be back to work, and you should be fine, and be at your desk, and you should be doing your job at 100%. The truth is, you're never right again. And I love this analogy, and I think I've told you before, we have a thing where we do with the kids where you break a broken, you have a pot that's beautiful, that grows a plant, and you put it in a pillowcase, and we break it, and we have the kids put the pot back together, we glue it together. And the whole thing behind that is, yes, your life is shattered when the person you die, when you lose a die. And it's like any trouble in life. There's things and troubles that will shatter our life. It's not just grief. But you can put that back together. It doesn't look the same. It's still messed up. There's still scars and stuff like that. But guess what? You can still grow a beautiful plant inside there.
I think that is one of the most beautiful things, analogies you can ever have. Because, yes, our lives are broken and they have very difficult things. We can grow such beauty in it if we build our faith. It also keeps us humble, keeps us humble. Let's look at 2 Corinthians 7 through 10. Paul talking about his pride here. Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh. Paul, we don't never know what Paul's thorn in the flesh was. We know that Paul had killed Christians and that he was very renowned. I think a lot of times people forget how renowned Paul was and how hard that has to be to give up your community. Paul was not only good at his job, he was a very big success. He was on track to be the most successful. And he changed completely to go from what he hated to become what he hated at one point. The thorn in the flesh kept Paul humble. And sometimes these things like this can keep us humble. To build endurance, Romans 5, 2 through 5. Though whom also we have obtained our instructions by faith into the grace in which we stand, and we exalt in hope of the glory of God. And not only this, but we exalt in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. What's perseverance? We continue on. Endurance. If you live 100 years, I'll never know. If you know somebody, please let me know. I've never known anybody who's 100 years old that said, I want to live for 15 more years. I've never known anybody that's been in their 90s that says, you know, I just live another 15 years. This life is great. Life needs endurance because it is a hard, hard race. It is not easy all the time. But at 90 years old, you can find joy in the day. I've seen very happy 100 years olds. I've seen happy 108-year-olds on TV and things like that. They're very happy. But they still don't want to live here forever. Just because you don't want to live someplace forever doesn't mean you can't be happy. This life requires a lot of endurance. It also, to teach. What did Paul learn from his troubles? Philippians 4, 11 through 13. Philippians 4, 11 through 13. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. That is the key. Be content in whatever circumstances you can. If you can be that, that is where you will find a lot of joy. You can also learn to comfort or relate to others. 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all afflictions so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. We exude God's qualities by the way we comfort others. Again, that is not going out and telling them, this is how you have to do it, this is how you do it, and this is how you get over it. There are certain things in life you will never get over. There are certain scars that never go away. But we all live with scars. And sometimes that scar is something that someone else went through. I'll give you a perfect example. There was, I knew this lady that was grieving the loss of her husband. Her husband had died on the day of her birthday. And these people were all grieving together, and they had just known each other for a couple weeks. And sometimes at work, we serve food. We help people serve food. We serve food to give them all a meal. And this lady came in, she said, hey, I've got this cake. It's this lady's birthday. She brought in this big, I've never seen a cake. It was like this big. And it was like a very good cake. It was a high cake. It was like one you say in like a cartoon. Like, you know, like the, what was it, the Beauty and the Beast? Be Our Guest. It's like that. It was like, it's a big cake. And I'm like, oh, have you known this lady for a long time? I just met her 3 weeks ago. But she knew it was that lady's birthday. She knew it was also the day that her husband died. And she just wanted to help focus on her birthday. She didn't want anything else. She didn't want anything more from that. Just a small gesture to help that lady enjoy her day. Even though that day is scarred for the rest of her life, you can still find joy in those days. To all, and this is the last one on this, to show all of us, to show all is of God and not of man. 2 Corinthians 4, 6 through 12, when we wrap up. For God who said, light shall shine out of darkness, is the one who has shone in our hearts to give the light of knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. When we say, let our light shine before men, what is that? To help guide them to Christ. That's what we're supposed to be doing. It is not to just shine our light and be like, look how glorious I am. Sadly, in Christianity, you see it way too much, where people are shining, trying to shine a light, not on God, but on them. Look how bright my light is. The only light that you are doing is not coming from you, but to shine a path to get to God. Appreciate Brother Chuck reading Matthew 14 there. And we look at verse 31 through 33, and we'll end our lesson here. What's it say there? Immediately, oh, this is the boat, sorry. This is. We'll read the whole thing because it's worth it. Matthew 14, 24. How do you rise above life's troubles? Look what happened here with Peter. Matthew 14, 24. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, Jesus, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, it is a ghost, and they cried out, for they were in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. Peter, people beat up Peter all the time. I want to be like Paul, but I'm so much like Peter. I just speak very profoundly, but I fail so much. Peter said to him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to the water. What a bold statement. And he said, come. And Peter got out of the boat. And he walked on the water and came towards Jesus. Let me ask you a question. Who is the other person other than Jesus and Peter who has walked on the water in the world? The answer is no one. Peter was able to walk on water. That's how much faith he had. But seeing the wind, he became frightened and began to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me! And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? When they got in the boat, the wind stopped, and those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, you are certainly God's son. When you are going through trouble, read this. Don't go to Job. Job is great, and Job has some things. Be this the first place you go to. This is Jesus. Go to Matthew 14 first and read this, because this is what it's like. The world will beat us down and toss us about. Learn that in verse 24. Verse 25 to 26, this is about 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. when things were dark. What happens when we have trouble? Things seem dark. They say in Batman, what was it? A great quote, the night is always darkest before the dawn. It's a very biblical thing. Not seeing, not knowing, but follows us. Where is this going? I don't have the answers. I feel very helpless. I feel very trapped. I feel very claustrophobic in this moment. Verses 27 through 29. Peter put his faith in God and steps in among the craziness of this world. And he is rising above it all, even though he's in the midst of it all. And I think that's such a beautiful image. It is a terrible storm. And what does Peter first think about? Let me walk on the water with you, not that I'm going to die in these waves. If you've ever been out in a boat in a storm, you know. If you've not, you don't. Look it up on YouTube, a boat in a storm. It is, talk about the most helpless situation you could be at. It is frightening. Verse 30, when we take our mind off the Lord, when we start to get caught up in the ways and problems of this world, we start to sink spiritually. We need to keep our focus, our faith on the Lord, and stay focused on His teachings. It's Jesus says, if you have faith in me, you can move mountains. He is not meaning that figuratively. He bends the weather. He bends the world to His will. Whatever Jesus asked, it did. The world listened to its creator. When he says, you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain, he is not being facetious. He is telling you the truth. And that's when you realize, my faith is not even that big.
How much more do I have to grow? How much more opportunity do I have to grow? That should humble us all, because we all can grow in our faith in every challenge, in every adversity, in everything we suffer. Look for a way to grow our faith, to fill that mustard seed, to move mountains, to walk on water.
Verses 31 through 33, the Lord will help us overcome our troubles. But we have to put ourselves and our lives into His hands and praise Him when the waters of life are calm. We sing that song in the little kids' class. He's got the whole world in His hands, and they have their little tiny hands, and they have this little globe about this big. And you just think of God, and all of them hold the world like this at some point. Sometimes they just throw it, but they'll hold it like this. And you could just think of Jesus and God. He's watching you. He cares for you. And He's not only doing that, He's there with you. He's there with us right now. And He wants to comfort us. He wants to help us. So in conclusion, after going through this study, what is keeping you from rising above the troubles and tribulations in this world? As I said, I have troubles in my life, and this lesson was to me. Hopefully you got something out of it. I got more out of it than I thought I would. Jay said he was not going to be up. I hope it'll help you focus on things. I hope it steadies your boat. And I hope you can help someone else steady their boat by helping them point to God. If you've never been baptized, this is a good way to steady your boat right here. You talk about, one of the kids asked me the day, was it a really happy day when you got baptized? I said, yeah, it was a happy day. Just last week, I was baptized when I was 17 years old. I got back from camp, and I got baptized. It was last Thursday, years ago. It was a great day. It felt really great. My dad baptized me. It was good. We were working on insulation in the top of our house, and I said, I want to be baptized with Craig, and he came out here and baptized me. But my life was not perfect after that. Far from it. But that day was really great. It'll be a great day for you. It'll be a great day for everybody. It'll be a great day for the angels rejoicing in heaven. But the great thing is that you have a group here that wants to help you and support you. And if you're having troubles in life, there's no shame in asking for prayers. We hide too much from each other. I'm an open book. People know that. My wife tells me I probably tell too much. I probably do. But I just believe there's no real secrets in life. And I'm always looking for help. Hopefully you are too. If you need prayers of the congregation, you can come forward and raise your hand. Or if you need baptized, you can come forward. Now as we stand and sing the song, Spence Lucky.